بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Whilst the Kitab Bazl al-Mashhud was being recorded, Hazrat Shaykh al-Hadith Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh, as per the instructions of his Ustad, as well as his Shaykh, Hazrat Mulana Khalil Ahmad Sahib Sahanpuri Rahmatullah Alayh, would go up to Deoband, that he could refer to some kitab. For reference reasons, he had to go to a bigger, greater library, check the references, get the quotations and extracts, and come back to Deoband. In Deoband, several types of people would meet as a Shaykh Rahmatullah Alayh, and amongst the people that he would come across was Mulana Habibur Rahman. He was still a student, and he was very active in politics, very, very active. It was a time of the political struggle, early 1940s. So the political struggle was very heavy at that time. And on account of the political struggle, in spite of him being a student, he would be running around here, there, all over the show. Some conference, some meeting, some get together. So he had to be all over the show. And for some reason or the other, the Shaykh Rahmatullah Alayh and this person, Mawlana Habibur Rahman, they could not just see eye to eye. He would say of the Shaykh Rahmatullah Alayh, "Why isn't this person dead? The inner of the earth is better for him than the surface of the earth." And the Shaykh Rahmatullah would say that it is haram for such people to be in the madrasa. That he is studying at the madrasa, he is eating from the madrasa, and he is running around all the show. If a person is studying, then he needs to be committed, he needs to be focused on his kitabs, in mutala, in preparing for the next lesson, in revising the previous lesson. So this is supposed to be the conduct of a student. So why is he running around? So for him to eat at the madrasa is haram. Anyway, time had passed, and the same person, Mawlana Habibur Rahman, he got in contact with Hazrat Mawlana Abdul Qadir Raipuri Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh. But the contact was made through him to his Shaykh, that was Mawlana Abdul Rahim Sahib Raipuri Rahmatullah Alayh. So he had taken bayat at the hands of Mawlana Abdul Qadir Sahib, but the wordings would be communicated from the Shaykh himself. The word would be communicated from the Shaykh and on the hands of Hazrat Mawlana Abdul Qadir Sahib Raipuri Rahmatullah Alayh. He got in contact, and Mawlana Abdul Qadir Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh had a lot of respect and a lot of love for the Shaykh al-Hadith Mawlana Muhammad Zakariya Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh. The love that he had was at the point of ishq, so deeply he had held him, and so much of respect he had for him. So on account of the deep love and the respect that he had, if anybody was coming to Raipur, so the road to Raipur has to be through Sahanpur. If you go through Sahanpur, then you come to Raipur. Asghar's face, I can see now, he knows the whole route. So you have to go through Sahanpur in order to get to Raipur. So if anybody came through and met Mawlana Abdul Qadir Sahib Raipuri Rahmatullah Alayh, then he would ask him, "Have you been to the Shaykh Rahmatullah Alayh?" If he said no, then he would be treated like one of the guests, normal. But if he says, no, I met the Shaykh Ramutlali and he conveyed salams, then he will seat him next to him, say, how's he, what's he been doing, how's his health, and he will be shown a little bit more attention. Now, to secure a little more attention from the Shaykh, everybody would ensure that they go and meet the Shaykh Ramutlali, and then they come up to Raipur. But this Buzruganuddin, they have some ideas, they have some systems, they have some intentions. The intentions are only materialized and only surfaced later on. You don't see it straight away. Let me say something, and you can't see what is the operation, what the plan is, but the plan only surfaces later on in life. You only see it afterwards. So anyway, on the one end, he couldn't just see eye to eye with the Shaykh Ramutlali. But on the other end, he needs to get the attention and the focus of his Shaykh. And if he does say that he didn't meet and he didn't see the Shaykh Ramutlali, he will be treated as an ordinary guest. He won't be given that additional attention. Now, how must he get that little bit of additional attention? So just to get that formality right, he would go to Sarpur, meet the Shaykh and move. Now the Shaykh would tell these guests that, you see, if you're coming during the day, then just a 2 or 3 minutes mulaqat. Don't let the mulaqat be more than 2 or 3 minutes. So I'm very busy in the day, I'm writing kitabs, so I need a lot of attention, a lot of focus. But if you want a detailed mulaqat, a detailed meeting, then let it be after Maghrib. So I'm free at that time, I can see you, and you don't feel that you're not being honored and respected. In the day, then my time is getting wasted. In the evenings, I am available, I can focus towards you. So anyway, one of those mulaqat, this Mawlana Habibur Rahman, now he's a Mawlana now. He's still junior to the Shaykh Ramutlali, but he is a Mawlana. And he says, Tasawuf kya bala hai? At the meeting, he says, Tasawuf kya bala hai? What is this problem? Tasawuf, what is this calamity? Bala is a calamity. What is this issue here? This Tasawuf. See, I'm going to Raipur, and I'll come back after 2 days, and I give you 2 days to think about it complete, and you give me the reply only after the 2 days. So the Shaykh Hamza says to him, alright, you don't have to wait for the 2 days, just take the answer immediately. The whole essence of tasawuf is tashiya niyat, correct your intention. And this correction of intention commences from innamal a'malu bin niyat. This is the starting point. And the ending point is anta'budallaha ka'annaka tara. That you worship Allah Ta'ala as though you can see Him. So the starting point is innamal a'malu bin niyat, niyat, correct your niyat. And the ending point is a sifat of ihsan, as though you are seeing Allah Ta'ala in all spheres of your life, at every moment of your life. You are watching Him and you are moving, step by step you are moving, with visualizing Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And then he went on to say, that you see, all the mujahada that you make, the muraqaba that you make, and they make you make zikrs, right? And all the type of sacrifices that they ask you to make, right? It's all aimed to get you to this point. And if someone has reached here, then he doesn't require all this. This is the procedure, right? Like in order to get to university, you have to start off from grade 1 till matric. And after matric, then you can get to university. But if for some reason someone is so capable that they put him into a university straight away, then he doesn't have to go through all the procedures. Because they checked him out, they evaluated him, and they saw that he's got that potential, that he doesn't need to go through the entire system. We can push him right through, fast track him, because he knows it. You ask him anything that a matriculant knows, he knows much more. So why should he go unnecessarily through the whole procedure? So the whole procedure is to bring you up here. When he heard this answer, he got a shock. For that moment, he was lost for that moment. And he says, you know, I left Delhi to come to Saharanpur in order to get to Raipur. But all the way I was thinking, you're going to answer this and I'm going to counter you like this. And you're going to answer like this and I'm going to counter like this. And you may answer like this and I may counter. All the road I was thinking. 7-hour journey, I was planning it out. I was planning it out. At night, before sleeping, I was planning it out. During the entire course of the journey, I was thinking it. But now, the answer that you gave me, you struck me. I've got no question now. Well, the Shaykh saying, inshallah, you won't have any question. Inshallah, you will not have any question. Anyway, he says, alright, I'm coming back after 2 days. But before that second day, he came on the first day. He's supposed to come a day later, he came 1 day earlier. He comes and he introduces himself. He says, I am this person, you know me. He says, you know, all that duration, I didn't have any respect for you, and I had no love for you. You know that, and I know it. But the answer that you gave me just left me wonderstruck. I am just confounded. I'm just struck with this answer. So this was the beginning of the association of the Shaykh Rahmatullah Alayh and this Mawlana Habibur Rahman Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh. Right? Later on, the relationship had improved and improved and improved to such a point that he had children now, and his affinity with the Shaykh Rahmatullah had grown to such a point that he says to the Shaykh Rahmatullah Alayh that my children, I got my 2 children, and they're going to be under your supervision in this madrasa. I say, no ways. The Shaykh said, no ways. Because you are politically inclined, and you're going to be running all over the show. Your children are going to be this, like you, like father, like son. And I just can't be comfortable with this political mind. Person who's too heavy in politics and all that, I can't just get along with such a person. So, we are working, you know, poles apart. You're working on one direction, I'm working on another different direction. We are poles apart. So I can't get along with you. You can't get along with me. So, how do you expect me to be in charge of your children? So, no, come what may, but my children are going to be under your supervision. Insisted. So, alright, then I'll have to make some preconditions. The first condition will be that your children will not look at any newspaper. In our zamana, no TV, no cell phone, no computer, because all that relates to information. So no, absolutely, you cut it off. And if one day, if he just looks at one article, from any paper, from any news, then, assalamu alaikum, you go your way, I go my way. We cut off completely. So come what may, you put all the conditions in the world, but my children are going to be under you. Whatever stringent conditions you put up, my children are going to be under you. Number 2, there will be programs in the madrasa that, well, the child has to attend, right? Like how a visiting alim or something comes, and he has a program at the madrasa. But, in the town, or elsewhere, if there's any popular orator, like Shah Ataullah Bukhari Sahib Rahmatullah, was a popular orator of that zamana, or anybody, even as a Mawlana Madani has to come, and he's having a lecture series around the town, your children are not going to attend any of them. Even if I do tell them, even if they come and ask for permission, they mustn't even take the trouble to come and ask for permission. They're not going to go for any lecture. They're going to be just stuck here. Nowhere they're going. It's on. Everything is on. The third condition was even more difficult. Third condition was that you're not going to be connected with any student. Not dostana, or na dushmanana. It's not going to be a relationship of love and no enmity, no muhabbat and no opposition. You're not going to be in one party, other party, rallying for one, canvassing for the other, or one for against the other. You're not going to be deep in any relationship with any student. No relationship and no enmity. You just work yourself to the ground as though you don't know anything else. You're meeting the person with a smile, finish, that's a relationship. But getting close, getting intimate, and getting informal with students, that's not going to be your work. They agreed to all. They agreed to all, and they stuck to their guns to such an extent thereafter, that even if the Shaykh Hamdallah told them, see, there's a dawat here, and you may attend, said, no, I'm not going to attend the dawat. I'm not going to attend the dawat. I had agreed that I will stay in the compound of the madrasa. I will not leave the compound of the madrasa. So I'll remain stuck here. But what it brought those children? Now imagine the man is politically inclined, orientated, totally different, right? But what it brought them? They became superb ulama-i-kiram, number one. Number two, in a few days they got khilafat from Hazrat Shah Abdul Qadir Sahib, Rai Puri Rahmatullahi. As it is, the Shah Abdul Qadir Sahib had very few khulafas. So to get up to that level where you get khilafat from him was not an easy thing. It was a very difficult process. So these two brothers got khilafat at one and the same time. So what I'm getting at is, the Shaykh Rahmatullah spoke about ikhlas. He says this whole effort, this whole endeavor, this whole exercise, this whole field is for what? It's aimed at what? It's aimed at correcting your niyat. As the Shah Waliullah Sahib Rahmatullah says, that the basis of the ta'lim, the basis of the effort of the anbiya are three. Three bases they've got. You know, we look at the endeavor, the effort, the struggle, then they are working towards three points. The first point is to correct and rectify niyat. No, I'm sorry. The first point is to rectify the belief, right? Right. Inni lakum nadhirum mubin, fattaqullaha wa ati'un. Right. You look at any Nabi and he's calling towards Allah Ta'ala. أَنِعْبُدُ اللَّهَ وَاتَّقُوا مَا لَكُم مِّنْ إِلَٰهٍ غَيْرُ أَنِعْبُدُ اللَّهَ وَاتَّقُوا. It's a common line with every Nabi. أَنِعْبُدُ اللَّهَ وَاتَّقُوا مَا لَكُم مِّنْ إِلَٰهٍ غَيْرُ. So that's a common line across the board, every Nabi. And you look at every Nabi, you open, examine what that Nabi's message, what was the common message in any Nabi, then you'll find أَنِعْبُدُ اللَّهَ وَاتَّقُوا مَا لَكُم مِّنْ إِلَٰهٍ غَيْرُ. Get your belief right. Get your aqidah right about Allah Ta'ala. You got your belief right. You got your beliefs right about the Anbiya alayhi salam. That you make no distinction between one Nabi against the other. You believe in all. You believe on the day of Qiyamah as it's supposed to be believed. Not how you would imagine it, but as it's supposed to be. So the first line in the whole procedure was to get the belief right. The second line that was common amongst all the Anbiya, was to rectify action, deed, conduct, action, behavior. You got your belief right very well, but have you got your conduct right? Have you got your behavior right? Have you got your actions and deeds right? Have you got your namaz right? All your rituals, have you got them right? Right. So the second aspect was covered by the fuqaha kiram. They defined the whole Sharia. They went and examined the Quran, the Hadith, everything. And they defined the Sharia, they codified it. And they did such a perfect job that it's over 1,000 years that have passed from their times. We still see them to be the most perfect. Nobody can come close to them. Nobody can come. Many people tried to do it, but they couldn't come anywhere near to these fuqaha kiram. They did such a perfect job, such a comprehensive job, such a job that is enduring. It's standing the test of time. From that time to now, it's standing the test. And nobody can bring anything that can match it, that can be equal to it. They were so superb in their way. They were so comprehensive in their ways. They were so magnificent. In their personal taqwa, they were so perfect and so excellent. One person saw the Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam in his dream. And as though he's asking for something, perhaps some question or something, some masala he's asking. And the Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam tells him that all these treasures are at this point, and Imam Malik will come and he will be in charge of all these treasures. So refer to him, in other words. Right? In other words, that whole treasure is given to Imam Malik rahmatullah alayhi. You go to him, if you got any query, any problem, then you go to him. And he will find solutions to your problem. So, on their personal taqwa, their personal righteousness, they have been endorsed by Rasulullah. The people of the time, they didn't find any point of contention, they couldn't find any weakness and any flaws in their taqwa and righteousness. They were so superb. Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal rahmatullahi alayhi. The kings of the time challenged them. And they stood like mountains. They couldn't be shifted. They couldn't be shifted. The kings of the time challenged them, but they couldn't be shifted. Imam Abu Hanifa rahmatullahi alayhi, because of his stance, he was poisoned and killed in that way. But he won't shift. He won't move. So they stood their grounds and they stood very, very firm. So their righteousness, their obedience, two women are discussing. You know, this man here, he stands all night long. And he reads so many rakats of nafal, 400 or 500 rakats every day. So Imam Abu Hanifa rahmatullah alayhi, when he heard this, he overheard this two women speaking. He says, hey, I'll be misleading people if I don't keep up to the standard from that day onwards, whole night and 500 rakats every day. I ask any of the majma that is here, tell me one day in your life you read 500 rakats. This man did it for years, approximately 40, 50 years, and he continued in that way. No inconsistency. He's going for Hajj, he's still doing it. He's at home, he's still doing it. He is conducting his fiqh classes, he's still doing it. Any given situation, and he's consistent in his pattern, there is no interruption in that pattern. So they were so perfect, so comprehensive. Now show me anybody that can match up to that standard, who knows at least about 500, half a million hadith, with the chain of narrators, and with all the kalam and all the discussion that goes in the authority, in the authenticity of the hadith. Show me anybody. Anybody that can match up to that standard. So this is the second work of the Anbiya. The second work was to get the amal right. So they will codify it, they will define it, and they will preserve it. They preserved it so well that nobody can point a finger at their work, right? And the third, as the Shah Waliullah Sabrahma says, and the third work that was common in all the Anbiya alayhim salam was to get the ihsan right. And ihsan is correction of niyat, starting off from this point, coming up to the point where every action, every deed of yours, you've got that concern, is Allah Ta'ala pleased or not? Performing that namaz, but is it in keeping with the pleasure of Allah Ta'ala? You've got conflicting thoughts running through your mind. Is Allah Ta'ala pleased about this? This person, I'm going to show him, I'm going to fix him up. But before you're fixing him up, you're looking at it at the mirror of Allah Ta'ala. That is Allah Ta'ala pleased. I've got this intention to fix him up, to spite him and to smash him down. But is it in keeping with the pleasure of Allah Ta'ala or not? At any given situation, this is your mindset. And thereafter he says that this is the asal and the origin of everything. Because even the iman will not be right, the deed will not be right without the intention. The intention is so important that the iman is not right. The deed is not right without your intention. Intention is all corrupt. So how do you expect the deed to be right? How do you expect the iman to be right when the ikhlas is not there, the sincerity, the niyat is not right? So the intention, that sincerity has to be rectified. Right? And then it has to be rectified in simple words. In simple words, I'm just giving it to you in a very, very simple way that you can digest it very easily. You have to get it to such a point, you know, every deed of yours, to get it to that point, you have to get it, that your mind is consumed with the thought that is Allah Ta'ala pleased or not? Is he pleased or is he displeased? Right. So this becomes like a natural phenomena within you. It's not a thing that you have to think of and you have to reflect. Well, it becomes like natural, like how you're breathing in. Right. Though it's a voluntary action, but it's as though it is involuntary. You're just doing it naturally. So every action, you are fine combing it, and you are combing it through that standard. That is Allah Ta'ala pleased or not? Is Allah Ta'ala displeased or pleased? Right. It's compared, or the simile for this, the analogy for this is, you've got a person who's on a life support. Right? So he's being kept alive artificially, right? Not naturally, he's being kept alive artificially. Oh, he's very serious. He's got all type of complications. every second day he has to go for dialysis, right? If he doesn't, then everything goes wrong in him, right? He needs to take 15, 20 tablets every day just to see that his body and his health remains, right? So artificially he's kept alive. He's got sugar tablets, he's got heart problems, see his heart problems, right? He's got cancer, everything. So just to see that he goes right, he needs to go for several type of treatments. One side sugar he's got, one side he's got cancer, he has to go for radium treatment. One side he has to go for his heart all the time, right? He's being kept alive. So that body is being kept alive, but it's being kept alive artificially, not naturally, right? And one is that person that is sustaining life naturally. So he's eating something, but he's just increasing his health, his stamina, his health, his body, fitness. He's got it there. Everything is natural. The body is craving for it, and the body is craving for it naturally, right? It's craving for sugar, but there's a natural craving for sugar. The body needs it, right? And the body is saying that I need this. It's craving for red meat, and you have to give it, and it's digesting it very well. It's complaining if it doesn't have it. It's got that real enthusiasm towards it. It's eating, and it's eating with relish. So it's eating sugar, it's eating red meat, right? It's eating butter and fats, but it's eating with relish. The body really needs it. And it's eating it with that enthusiasm, it's eating with that relish, it's eating with that desire, and it's eating naturally. Tell me, both are the same. Can't be identical. So the first is that person who's spiritually dead, who's spiritually on a life support, that you have to give him all this type of medication to keep him alive spiritually, right? And the second person is natural. The namaz is natural. I need to perform that namaz. I overcharged that person. I'm not feeling easy at all. I did it. Accidentally I've done it. So I have to go and ask him for a maaf and return that money to him. It was an estate problem. I can't allow 1 hour to pass without getting the estate problem right. Forget one day, forget 1 year, forget 10 years. I need to get that thing right. I need to get it on course. 1 hour else I cannot pass. Because Allah Pak will be displeased with me. It's an estate problem. Nobody knows about it. It's only me and Allah Ta'ala that knows about it. So I need to get it on course. I need to get it on track. So his heart is uneasy. His mind is uneasy. Until he doesn't conform to that standard that is Allah Ta'ala pleased with. It was his wife, it was his staff, it was his subordinate, it was someone that was working for him. And he had a fallout with the person. So he doesn't feel comfortable. One day cannot pass until he goes up to him, asks him for a maaf. I have stumbled, I have overplayed my part, I said things that I'm not supposed to be saying, but I'm sure Allah Pak will not be pleased. So I ask you for a maaf. What do I need to do to compensate for this? Please do tell me, make me maaf. Whatever you tell me, I am prepared to do it. Because that spiritual strength, that spiritual body is naturally fit, is naturally healthy. It doesn't require any type of an assistance. It doesn't require any type of a support. It doesn't require anything. It's natural. Everything is coming out naturally. Tahajjud, you're performing tahajjud for years, you're performing tahajjud. Naturally, you must get up. Until you didn't perform the namaz, you don't feel easy. Let alone your farz namazes. Tahajjud, I must get it. You must get it. As Muawiyah radiallahu anhu, he did not get up for one tahajjud. So the next day at tahajjud, he got someone getting him up for tahajjud. So as the person got him, he just gripped his hand. Who are you, bhai? No, I just caught you up. You know, you missed out tahajjud yesterday. So you shouldn't be missing all the time. But who are you? No, I'm Mr. Shaitan. But of all people, you came and got me up for tahajjud. What was your problem? So no, I just thought I need to be considerate now and then, you know. I'm taking people to Jahannam all the time, but sometimes I need to be considerate as well. No, but tell me what's the real reason. Now spiritually he was so fit, so strong. Shaitan has to give up the story. He says, you see, last night you missed out your tahajjud. And you cried the whole day long. The whole day you long. Like you got a business, for example. the busiest day of the year, where you're knocking 10 million on that day, right? And you missed out. How long you'll cry? 5 minutes. You know, it's one of those things. Takdeer mein thi to, hone do, rehne do. What will be your response? You say takdeer and forget it there, at that point. No, you will cry. You will cry and you will cry. Hey, the 10 million it went, man. Hey, what a stupid thing I did. Only that one day, if I could make sabr for that one day, what I would have got. So that was because of your physical fitness, right? Your physical strength. Now, equally, if someone is spiritually strong, then he will cry for something that is spiritual. So Mr. Shaitan had to say, you know what? The whole day you cried, the whole day you cried. And I could see that you were being exalted by Allah Ta'ala. And you were going from stage to stage, from level to level. You were just moving and you were just escalating. So I thought, you know what? If this man is going to miss it for the second day, he's going to cry again. And the way he's going to cry now, I can't even see him where he's now. I said, no, let's bargain for something cheaper. So you see that Shaitan is prompting you. But he's prompting you not that he likes you, but because he doesn't want you to be exalted to that level. So now you get one person that is spiritually very, very fit. Very fit. The moment he heard one word, one line of ghibat, no, I'm not comfortable at all with this. One line of ghibat, one line of gossip, one line of hearsay, one line of chugalkhori. No, I can't stand it. He's feeling so hurt, so disgusted, so distraught, like it is excreta that is in his hand, that is smeared upon his face. How you feel? Can you resist? Can you restrain that? Can you keep that? You can't. You feel like someone has smeared number two on your face. How do you feel? So that man is so spiritually so strong that that detestability and the hurt in his heart, the distraught in his heart, the pain in his heart is so much. Like how someone took excreta and smeared it over your face. You can't stand it. So now, the idea is to make you spiritually strong. That's the whole idea. And the process is that all these impediments and the obstructions that are within your spiritual self, to iron them out, to clear them out. Once they clear them out, once everything is cleared, now you see, you can't resist. You can't resist. I know there was a poet in Dioman, you know. Poet, they got their own styles, they're living in a different plane. So one day he was there by Qari Tayyab Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi. So Qari Sahib went, poets also, they come for some handouts, you see. So he was a little bit educated in Arabic also. So anyway, Qari Sahib went for a handout for him inside his room to get something for him. In the meanwhile, he's keeping us engaged, he's entertaining us. He says, you know, when I was studying tafsir, so the ustad spoke about muttaqi, you know, taqwa. What is taqwa? And the ustad gave an explanation that by accident, say for example, you were alone with a girl, you know, you'd make absolute no advancement, not even your mind is going towards that direction. Forget you making any advances, your mind is not there, you're looking in a total different direction, and you're running out of that situation. That is taqwa. Now this poet is telling us, you know, koi namard bhi ho sakta hai. Can a person be important to that level? Now he's a poet, so he'll think of all stupid things, nonsensical things. Now, this is indicative of the fact that the man is spiritually dead. And the man that is spiritually alive, how will his response be? Sulaiman ibn Yasar, rahmatullahi alayhi, they are proceeding towards Hajj. He and his sati, they are proceeding towards Hajj. And they came by a point called Abwa. So they stationed there, they got their tent there. So he is there whilst his sati had to go and do some shopping. In the meanwhile, one woman came. She spotted him from the mountaintop. And she saw the man is so handsome, irresistible. Irresistible. So she came from the mountaintop. He's all alone. This person has just left for the shop. So before he does his works and all his rounds, it'll be at least about 3-4 hours before he comes back. And this woman also, if this man is the sun, then she is like a moon. Both are beautiful. Both are beautiful. And she came to the tent. says, you know what, I have come for you. He said, get away, I got nothing. So no, you know, I came. First he thought she came for some handout or something. No, I came for what a man does with his wife, you know. He put his head down on his knees and he started crying, and he cried so loud that this woman got a fear that someone may think that I came to rob, I came to cheat, or I hit this person here, and therefore he's shouting. She ran for her life. Anyway, it wasn't too long that his sati had come. His sati had come and he saw him crying and bursting out in tears. So what, this what happened? So sati began to cry. I said, hey, I don't know if I was in your position, I don't know if I could resist this temptation. You know, we are out in a journey, already we covered about 4 months of a journey, we are away from our families, 4 months away, right, from our family going for Hajj. And this thing came of her own to you, and she is beautiful as a moon, or as a star she is so beautiful. And then you, immediately your responses were like this. So anyway, they proceeded until they came to Makkah Mukarramah. He's around the Maqam Ibrahim and Hajar Aswad at that point. And there, whilst he's sitting after his tawaf and wajib with tawaf and everything else, he just went into a sleep. And in that sleep, he sees Hazrat Yusuf alayhi salam. So he says to Yusuf alayhi salam, hey, but your incident with Zulaikha was something absolutely unique and fabulous, you know, how you acted and all that, how you ran away and escaped. So Yusuf alayhi salam is telling him, but your incident with the woman at Abwa was even more strange. So you hold Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala at that point in your life, everything is being seen, it's being inspected. One thing after the other, one thing after the other. Now you call yourself spiritually alive. You call yourself self-motivated. You call yourself that you naturally fit, naturally healthy. You don't need any type of support. You don't need any type of medication. You don't need any type of dialysis. You don't need any type of treatment. Nothing you need. Spiritually, you are very, very fit, very sound. So now, our case is not like that. We need something, some type of a support, some type of a medication, some type of a dialysis, some type of a failure we're going through all the time. And the failure that we are going through, we need to come for a support. We need to come for a support. So now, we need to get ourselves so spiritually strong and steady that we're not looking for any support. We are strong ourselves. Any situation comes about and we're strong, we can withhold, we can withstand. So this whole exercise is for that. As Shah Wali Rasulullah says, that this is the reason for this whole exercise, from the beginning to the end, this is the reason, to get that ihsan right. And that ihsan is so important. He says, without the ihsan, without getting that niyat right, then your iman is not right, your amal is not right, nothing is right. He concludes the article saying, is kajasadin bila ruhin, it's like a body without a soul. Can this body stand? That body without a soul, can it stand? Can it exist? Can it continue? It can't continue. And he defined and he identified the problem. What's the problem? See, in our lives, what is the problem? The problem is this soul is dead. The soul is not alive. We think it's alive. So it has to come to that point where everything is becoming natural. Rebirth is like natural. Your eyes is like natural. Your ears are like natural. Your mouth is like natural. Your movement, everything is like natural. Everything is just coming out. It's flowing out. You want to do it. You don't do it. You feel very, very edgy. You feel very, very uneasy. You don't feel right until you haven't done it. You feel so uneasy. Like how most of us, right, with the grace of Allah Ta'ala for the Jummah, until you haven't done it, how uneasy will you feel? If you miss it, what happens? Hey, I missed out, man. For a year you'll cry, I missed out my Jummah. Even though it was an accident, say you just overslept. You just overslept and you missed out that Jummah. But for the year you'll cry, you'll shout your wife, you'll shout your children, you'll shout everybody. Why you saw me? Why didn't you talk? Were you dead at that time? Were you dumb at that time? Couldn't you speak up? Couldn't you see me sleeping? You'll cry, you'll shout, you'll wail, you'll make all type of noises. Why? You missed out the Jummah. So that level of recognition must be for every obligation, every deed of yours, that you got no, you're not selective. Oh, this is alright, it's not too bad, it's not too bad, it's not too bad. You don't have that attitude, it's not too bad. No. Allah Pak will be displeased, whether it's small, or whether it's huge, Allah Pak will be displeased. Will you say, right, if you're going to meet your wife for the first day, you know, for the first day, you're going to meet your wife, right, you don't have excreta polished over your face, but you just have a little bit of snot coming down your nose, you know. Will you say it's not too bad? Will you have that attitude? See? Not too bad, it's one of those things. Now it's not napak now, it's not najis, you know, it's not an impurity. Will you have that attitude? You won't have that attitude, bhai. You will never have that. You'll go and wash your face. You'll do 101 things before you present yourself. It was the first meeting. Even the 100th meeting, you won't allow the snot to be running down your nose, coming down your lips. You'll never allow that. Why won't you allow that? You feel that it's not acceptable. And if she behaves like that, you say, no, bhai, I think I made the wrong selection. You also will not accept it and she will not accept it. You will not say it's not too bad. It's not too bad. You don't want to cause any type of displeasure to that spouse. So your relationship with Allah Ta'ala is like that. No, Allah Pak mustn't be displeased. Small thing or big thing. I can't be seeing now. It's a small thing now and let it be pushed under the carpet. No, you can't say that. You see this point of ikhlas, this point of sincerity, how important it is. How such an important aspect. I was talking to one person, one, two incidents that took place in the course of the week, you know. Just to bring out this point of ikhlas, this consciousness, this awareness of Allah Ta'ala, at any given moment, one person came up and he was crying quite profusely, poor chap. So he says that the child that was conceived up till the 7th or 8th month was absolutely normal. In the 9th month, they saw all complications on the scan. The spinal column is protruding out of the neck. There's some complications in the stomach. The organs are failing. And there's only a heartbeat in the child now. And now, I could understand that what's going to be the next question. The next question will be, can I terminate? Obviously, that's going to be the question. Can I terminate the pregnancy? So I told him, by the grace of Allah Ta'ala, look at it from different perspectives. The one choice you have, the one option you have, is to terminate. But if you terminate, now look at the consequence of you terminating this whole thing. The fetus now is alive, right? The child you believe is alive, says he. I ask you, what's the difference between the child that's in the fetus and the child is out? Is there any difference? There's no difference. Both are alive, just that one is concealed and one is apparent. That's the only difference. But otherwise, in every respect, both are alive. Both are breathing. Both are taking food. They are eating and they are carrying on. So what's the difference? Okay. Number two, I told him, by the grace of Allah Ta'ala, that if you're going to kill this child, for the rest of your life, you will have a conscience that I killed my innocent child without any reason. No reason I had, but cold-blooded, I went and killed this child. And why did I kill this child? Is for the fear of people's impression about my child, what they would say about my child. That was my great concern, that what will people say about my child? He's got a Down syndrome, he's got this, he's got whatever else. So I can't be able to live with this. I can't be able to live with myself. How am I going to live with myself? Second, right? The third thing, Allah Pak will give life to this child on the day of Qiyamah. He will take you by the collar and he'll say, Allah Pak, ask my father, ask my mother, why did they kill me? I was innocent, I was your masoom bachcha was. For what reason they have killed me? Why have they killed me? What guna have I committed? Why wasn't I given an opportunity in life to continue my life? Why was I taken away? That child is going to hold your collar and ask Allah Ta'ala, وَإِذَا الْمَوْءُودَةُ سُئِلَتْ بِأَيِّ ذَنْبٍ قُتِلَتْ. What answer have you got by Allah Ta'ala? Right? Now that is the negative side. Now look at the positive side, right? The positive side is, if this child was born, right? Now, say he was, the worst situation was, he was like a cabbage, right? Absolutely useless. If he lived, he lived. If he didn't live as well, it's not going to be a problem for you. It's not posing as a problem. Right. Firstly, your conscience would be absolutely clear and straight. I haven't terminated life. I haven't killed this child. I haven't deprived him of anything. So no matter what people say, but between you and Allah Ta'ala, you got a clear conscience. You went for Hajj, you got a clear conscience. You went for Umrah, you got a clear conscience. You read Namaz, Jummah Namaz, any Namaz you read, but you got a clear conscience. The other way around, you read Namaz, you read everything, but I don't know why I'm going to kill my child. It's going to trouble you right till the day that you die. It's going to trouble you, but can I do this? Why did I do this? Oh, but that one Mulana says is right. But it will keep troubling you, it will keep distressing you, distraught. It's going to agonize you all the time. Are you worried? Why am I suffering agony? Why am I suffering depression? Why am I suffering like this? You have to suffer. There's no other truth. There's no other way. But you have to suffer. Why did you take the soul of an innocent child? So it's going to trouble you, right? The positive side, again, I explained to him. This child here, right, on the day of Qiyamah, this child will say to Allah Ta'ala that these are my parents. They afforded me an opportunity in life. In spite of all the backlash, in spite of all the negativity, in spite of all negative type of criticism, but they love me to bits. They spared me an opportunity to live on your earth, O Allah Ta'ala, like they spared me, you spare them today. Like they spared me, O Allah Ta'ala, you spare them. And O Allah Ta'ala, I'm not going to enter Jannat without them. I just refuse to go. Until Allah Ta'ala will say, أَيُّوَ السِّقَةُ الْمُغْرَاغِمُ رَبَّهُ أَدْخِلْ أَبَوَيْكَ الْجَنَّةِ تم نے پریشان کر رکھا ہے بچہ تم نے پریشان کر رکھا ہے fighting so much take all your parents to Jannat. What a great thing. Small little things. And one doctor must say this, one doctor must say that, one gynae must say this, the scan must say that. Gee, our belief is in Allah Ta'ala. Bhai. We came from Allah Ta'ala, we're reaching up to Allah Subhanahu Wa Ta'ala. Gee, this is a small little trial that we go through. And the chances are, if the child is like that, he won't live long. Right? But why do you deprive yourself of this opportunity, this blessing? Allah Pak has given you a blessing of Jannat. Now, is the reputation, the concern of reputation greater? Or is the question or the aspect of you standing before Allah Ta'ala and Allah Pak saying, what a wonderful banda you were. And all the negativity, everything was against you. But you stood up for me. You stood up for this child. I will stand for you. This child will be in your favor. You didn't worry about the entire world. You were conscious about me. You were concerned about me. You were concerned that of my pleasure or my displeasure. And that concern had ruled everything else. Had overruled everything else. So this aspect of the consciousness, the awareness of Allah Ta'ala at any given moment, that must overrule every situation. Whether it's a personal thing. Whether it's a personal thing. I explain that person after. Alright, look at it. You are a child, healthy, strong, and intelligent, everything else, right? And Allah Ta'ala says that you felt that your brains was leading you. You were more concerned about reputation, whatever else. Now I'll show you. And if Allah Ta'ala makes the child intelligent, he becomes a very professional person. But in few days thereafter, he becomes a druggist. He begins to womanize. He becomes a gay. You won't know where to hide your face in shame. Because you were just concerned of Allah Ta'ala. You didn't believe in the unseen. You didn't believe that Allah Ta'ala is watching, is recording, and everything is in record by Allah Subhanahu Wa Ta'ala. You didn't think about that in this way. You were just overwhelmed by people's feeling. So you believe in Allah Ta'ala. You are convinced about His promises. And you also have that deep down conviction that I'm going through a difficulty, but Allah Ta'ala will compensate. He will replace me just now. You have that conviction. Never mind what it is. Many a times, it is a child that is backwards. He is laid back. But he is the barakat of the house. I had consoled one woman, She had a child like that. And she complained. over the phone. So I answered her. I told the woman, Ben, we don't wish for calamities, right? We don't ask for difficulties to come. We don't ask for it. Nor do we show that we are brave, you can take on anything, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We don't say that. But if it comes our way, then take it with a smile. Take it with a smile, take it with a cheer. We ask Allah ta'ala for ease, we ask Allah ta'ala for happiness. But if it is His will that some difficulty must come our way, then we take it with a cheer. Then I explained to this woman that, you see, the child is like this, he's laid back. Right? He's retarded perhaps. He can't think how they will say nowadays, you know, Down syndrome, he thinks like a 2-year-old, 3-year-old. These are the type of statements that people make, right? Now look at it from another point, look at it from another perspective, from another angle, look at it completely. Right? It is because of this child that is laid back that you are saved from a lot of fitnas. You can't go, you don't have the freedom of your movement. You can't go to places that you want. Right? Why this child? I have to take care of this child. So you wanted to go to the hall, to the mall, to places that are right, wrong. You were not discriminating. Right and wrong, you were not doing anything. But now because of this child that is laid back, you can't enjoy your freedom. You have to be more concerned about this child. Is he happy? Is he comfortable? And in the presence of public, how people will take this child. So now because of them, you will be laid back, you'll be at home. You will be humble, and you will not grumble, and you will be pleased with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But this child has become a blessing. The blessing will only be understood the moment your eyes closed. Before that, you don't understand that it's a blessing. As I said, you don't ask for it. You don't desire for it. You don't make dua for it. But it came your way. Then you take it that Allah Ta'ala, it's from you. And you gave it to me for a reason. In the Quran Sharif, Allah Pak is speaking about Jannat, etc. And he says, وَبَشْرِ الْمُخْبِتِينَ. Who is this mukhbitin? This khabit, who is it? Allah Pak says, give them the good news. The mukhbit, who is that mukhbit? In 2-3 places in the Quran Sharif, Allah Ta'ala speaks about this. Give good news. Bashri sabirin. Bashri al-mukhbitin. Sabirin, we all know. Give them good news. Give them the glad tidings. But who is this mukhbit? The mukhbit is that person, according to the Mufassirin, that they don't hurt anybody. They don't hurt anybody. And if they are hurt, then they don't retaliate. I won't hurt you. Not mentally, not physically, not verbally, not in any way, I won't hurt you. Not even verbally will I hurt you. Not even mentally will I hurt you. Not even emotionally will I hurt you. I won't hurt you in any way. I won't hurt you. I'll wish for you. I'll wish good for you all the time, no matter what you do. But I won't wish bad for you. Right? But if you hurt me, in the event you hurt me, I will not retaliate. I'll leave it. So that's the one explanation. That they will not retaliate even though some act of cruelty was done to them. Right? Number two, the second explanation for mukhbit is that person who is pleased with Allah Ta'ala in every situation. Every situation. Calamity, prosperity, poverty, whatever it is. You know, we need to look at life differently. See, what we are looking at is abundance. Whether it is the person that is educated or uneducated, everybody is looking for abundance. But that abundance is not a criteria of progress. Like you see abundant rain, right? That abundant rain, is it a guarantee for abundant produce? Is it a guarantee? Like this year everybody complained that they didn't get coastal mangoes, right? Complained, huh? But all the years you got, you made Allah, made sugar. This year, one year Allah Pak didn't give, complete. Hey, Allah Pak didn't give us this year. But all the years He's been giving you, made enough sugar for that. So you had abundant rain, right? As a result of that abundant rain, what happened to the product? The product was less. So your whole production, is your deed. As a mu'min, as a believer, it's your deed. That's your production. Your whole life's production. What is it? It's your deed. So with that abundance made about a decrease in your production, was it worth the while? And and the other way around, you had less. And there was a lot of production. Namaz, Quran Sharif, Zikr, Tilawah, he's happy man. Whatever Allah Pak gives him, he's happy. So he's got less, but there's a lot of production. So what's better? So don't ask for a lot of production. Don't ask for a lot of wealth. Ask for a lot of good. Good in both the ways, in this world and the hereafter. Allah Taufiq Nasib.